Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions expressed on Wolf Dog Radio by our guests and participants of the audience are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of the production team of the hosts of Wolf Dog Radio. We are open to your ideas for future radio programs. Please feel free to email us with questions or comments at questions@wolfdogradio.com.
Good evening, I'm George Stapleton, and welcome to Wolf Dog Radio. On this episode of Wolf Dog Radio, we are pleased to interview renowned international animal trainer, behaviorist, veterinarian, and ethologist, Dr. Ian Dunbar. Many things have changed in the life of Ian since we spoke to him over 18 months ago, including Ian's new Academy All Access Pass online subscription course. Information will follow later in this broadcast, where one lucky person will win a one-year subscription to the Dunbar Academy All Access Pass. Join us as we catch up with Ian and his family and training and rearing tips. After these messages from our sponsor, we'll return with Dr. Ian Dunbar.
From the moment a puppy comes into the world, the soul of a wolf is also born. And even as adults, they continue to share an evolutionary connection, one that's best reflected in their love for meat. That's why there's Blue Wilderness. It's made with more of the meat your dog desires. Blue Wilderness, because inside your dog lives the soul of a wolf.
This is Linda Michaels, and you are listening to Wolf Dog Radio.
Thank you for joining Wolf Dog Radio. Tonight we have Dr. Ian Dunbar, and he's going to join us and talk a little bit about puppies. It's puppy season in the wolf dog world, and we want to get a good start for those animals, and this is going to be a great discussion. In addition, tonight we're also going to ask Dr. Dunbar, and who prefers us to call him Ian, to talk a little bit about the last 18 months and some of the cool things that are going on. Ian, thank you so much for joining us tonight. How about a little bit of
thank
a rundown
you
of what you've been doing? Yeah, thank you, sir. How about
well,
you give us a bit of a rundown?
There's been a lot of changes in my life. As you know, I gave up the seminar trail 18 months ago. I was spending 9 months a year in hotels, going all over the world, lecturing to, 100 people here, 100 people there. And I was actually kind of shell-shocked when I stopped. I missed the people, lots of good friends around the world, and I sort of didn't know what to do with myself, and so I went through a period of about 9 months of, going somewhere warm and sunny every month, and relaxing and reading lots. And then about 9 months ago, I got back to writing, working with Kelly and Jamie, and working on a lot of new programs, which are just thoroughly exciting me. The one I was doing today is it's an at-home training program for people. So rather than class training or learning from a book, it'll be a website that takes you through the first week day by day, then week by week up until 6 months, and then month by month up until 3 years, and it tells you what to do, all the way. So this, I'm doing with Kelly and Jamie, and of course the whole lecture thing is different now, that I now reach more people. Like you mentioned their Facebook Live thing. I mean, that reached 250,000 people. So here am I in my own front yard drinking a beer with Kelly and Jamie, and I reach more people in an hour and a half than I do a whole year traveling around the world. So it's
Bravo,
very exciting
Ian.
Stuff.
Bravo.
Yeah,
Bravo.
And we love
Bravo.
Doing it. I mean, I never thought I'd end up working, with my son and, with Kelly on board as well. It's just, it's a lot of fun. What can I say? Ian has a good time.
Yeah. That I'm glad to hear. Can you tell us a little bit about June 1st and what people can do prior to June 1st if they want to get involved with the Academy?
Oh, yeah. Jamie came up with the idea of having a subscription service where people could access all of our materials, you know, every book, every video, every seminar. So, like, it's days and days of me talking for a very small subscription price, which was $10 a month. And in addition to that, we added in a lot of exclusive extra stuff for our subscribers to the All Access Pass. You know, and we're adding material, most weeks, but every month we add materials and things that are exclusively available on the All Access Pass. The thing that I love is my old TV program. So I used to have a TV series in England for 6 years. So that's available there, and it's just a hoot. We call it Retro Dunbar now because I was a little younger then, and people wear such weird clothes, you know. But, it's the best value in dog training. There's no question about it. I mean,
Wonderful. That's wonderful. And it isn't. That's not very good. That's not much of a cost at all to have access to all that information. I think that's fantastic. I really do.
No, I think, I was saying when you can spend 10 grand to go to a dog training school somewhere and only work with one dog, you know, I think this amount of information is a steal. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm getting in on that deal. Tell Jamie thank you for letting the cat out of the bag, but I'm going to grab that as much as I can. Listen, I wanted to ask you, because I'm curious, there's a lot of books and papers that you've authored. I see your name on out there. Any idea how many, and is there any one thing that you've authored that really stands out?
Wow. That's a good question. I mean, I have a number of books out of print now. I kind of like two dog behavior books. I really like the How to Teach New Dog Old Tricks for people that like reading. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Dunbar's Good Little Dog Book for people who prefer pictures. But I think the nitty-gritty of what, you know, I wrote were the two puppy-raising books, Before You Get Your Puppy and After You Get Your Puppy, which are available for free. I hope your listeners know that. Just go to dogstardaily.com. Because it's a different style of writing. I changed my style. I always used to talk around problems. Like I'd say something like, there's many reasons why dogs dig. You know, they dig to bury bones, they dig them up again, dig to catch little critters, to dig warming pits or cooling hollows, and go on and on and on. Rather than getting to the nitty-gritty, how to stop dogs digging in your garden. So now I always come out, you know, the best way to house train a dog is, and the information is all up front. And so that's what I did in these two books for puppy owners. It really told them the nitty-gritty with very few words. And when I write now, my son edits, and he probably halves the number of words for everything I write.
Yeah.
I like writing. I like words. I'm English, you know. I like reading books still, real books. But when you're trying to relay information, yeah. When you're trying to relay information, it's got to be short. So one of the things I was doing today, actually, I have a little brown book, has a cow on the cover, and Jamie gave it to me. It's a lovely notebook. And I decided I'm going to come up with about 100 different memes in the world of dog training. And so I'm coming up with the words, you know, so they're short and sweet. And so, for example, or whatever. And then Jamie can illustrate them. So we can make these little illustrations that people can forward, and each one is like a learning point, you know.
A nugget of information.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
A little nugget. And because they're short and sweet, people love them. And they spread like wildfire.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, I'm going to look forward to that. I am. Hey, is there anything that you really just want to chat about, Ian? I know there's a lot of things, but is there anything that is something important to you that you'd like to talk about? Because I only have one more question after this one.
I think so, yeah. I've been working on behavior programs for all the dog professionals, you know, for breeders and, you know, shelter workers and shelter rescues and veterinarians, pet store retailers, trainers. And I think it's time for all of them to reevaluate their practices, what they do. Because, you know, I think we've blamed irresponsible pet ownership for too long, and we can't keep doing that if no one tells them what to do. And no one is telling them what to do. And I think the thing I feel most strongly about is probably breeding. And I think it's not right that far too many dogs die so young, and we of predictable causes. And I think that breeders should really breed for longevity. You know, when I get to live with a dog, it takes me about 5 years to bond, and then I want the process to go on now for another dozen years. But if your dog dies at five, like our French bulldog did, or my first Malamute, it's horrible. And so I think the breeding practices are really this. I know some very good breeders, don't get me wrong, but by and large, they are awful. And I'm really doing a lot of work on this breeding program for breeders, which is in their best interest. I mean, things like, why don't they house train the puppy before they sell it? It's so easy to do, and if you house train a litter of puppies, you don't have to clear up all the, you know, feces and urine and what have you. So it's simple stuff like that. It's in their best interests, I think, to reevaluate their practices, and I think I'd say the same for all dog professionals. So I see the next year being a big revolution in the doggy world in terms of improved education. Because, you know, the whole reason we have shelters and rescues is because puppies weren't raised properly. I mean, it's as simple as that. That's the number one reason. People can give other reasons, and they do. But, you know, when I worked at the shelters, I used to analyze reasons for surrender, and they were all people reasons. Well, shouldn't it be a dog reason? You know, they'll say things like, oh, I'm moving. So I would say, are you married? Yeah. Have kids? Yeah. Taking them with you? Yeah. Then why are you leaving the dog? You see, it's an excuse for an animal that isn't well trained. And I wouldn't place the blame on the owner there that's not well-trained, because no one told them how quickly things happen. And by 5 months, you've kind of, you know, screwed the pooch, so to speak, because now rehabilitation would take forever. So prevention, 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 prevention. You know, better breeding programs and then better education of prospective and new puppy owners.
Thank you for joining Wolf Dog Radio. Tonight we have Dr. Ian Dunbar, and he's going to join us and talk a little bit about puppies. It's puppy season in the Wolf Dog world, and we want to get a good start for those animals, and this is going to be a great discussion. In addition, tonight we're also going to ask Dr. Dunbar, and who prefers us to call him Ian, to talk a little bit about the last 18 months and some of the cool things that are going on. I got to watch your most recent Facebook broadcast, and it's awesome. It's awesome. So I thought we'd focus on things that you're aware of and are doing, and maybe you can inform us a little bit about what your plans are and how our listeners can become part of your family, as it were, and understanding and training. And I have a couple of real simple questions, but one of the things I was really hoping you would discuss with us and maybe focus on specifically for Wolf Dogs, maybe Wolf Dog puppy training. It's that season, and they are all over the place right now, and there's some very high content animals that breeders have educated their buyers on, but by and large, as you know, there is a difference, and I wonder if you're comfortable talking a little bit about that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, if there were a need to do anything with a wolf dog, it's the whole notion of puppy training. I don't just mean teaching it to come and sit and lie down roll over, which is very important. But the notion of socialization, classical conditioning, environmental enrichment, all this stuff, it all happens so early. And first I'll explain what it is, because, you know, people use this word socialization and they don't really understand what's going on there. What is happening is that experience, whether it's physical experience from being in the world, sights, sounds, touches, especially social experiences, immediately, within seconds, change the anatomy of the brain. So that's what's happening.
That's,
you know, we tend to think of the brain as being this structure which is immutable, but it's actually in a state of constant flux. It's plastic. It has plasticity. It can change according to experiences in the environment. And I mean, they've known this now for about 40 years, and it's one of the reasons when I did my PhD that I chose Berkeley, California, because that's where all of the seminal research was being done. With adult animals then, what they find now is the younger the animal, the more changeable the brain. And so if you don't socialize, you're going to end up with an animal that basically it's underdeveloped to the point of being brain damaged and certainly does not have the brain capacity to handle things like social savvy with its own kind, let alone with people. So early experience is so, so, so very important. And if we were talking about just a normal old domestic dog, you know, I would tell people that in domestication, we selected for ease of socialization. However, an animal has to be socialized before you can even consider it to be domestic. Well, of course, with a hybrid, you know, with wolf dogs, I mean, you've got some non-domesticated animal in there too. And so we don't just need to socialize, we have to super socialize. So to give people a ballpark figure, I you know, with just a normal, say, a golden retriever puppy or a doodle or a shih tzu, I would say 100 people minimum prior to 8 weeks of age. The clock is running. And then another 100 between 8 and 12 weeks. With a wolf dog, I would increase that, obviously, and monitoring the development of the dog as it goes, because with socialization in terms of how is the adult animal going to react towards people, especially men and children, it's very deceptive because the young animal appears to be perfectly fine. Of course it does. It's a puppy or a cub or a puppy cub, whatever you call them. And they should be universally accepting, you know, up until about 8, 10, or 12 weeks. And then it is normal development. This is not aberrant development. It is normal development for puppies and cubs to now start to avoid, to shy away from, and then become fearful towards people or types of people they have not met beforehand. So that's normal development. But we don't think about it because we think, oh, the pup is fine, the cub's fine. Yeah, he is. And in domestic dogs, this avoidance behavior doesn't normally come in until about 4, 4.5, 5 months. But if you've got any wild animal in there, any hybrid, you're going to start to see signs starting about 10 weeks or 12 weeks. But up until then, it all appears to be, you know, fine and dandy. So that's what we're talking about here.
So how best could we help our audience who has a pup, let's say, that's in an 8 to a 13-week state, and has socialized with about half those people that you've talked about and is going to have the opportunity for more, and we're seeing it. How do we And let's just sit, not assume, but let's assess that these are what we call a high-content wolf dog. So this is a known bloodline. These animals are known for their level of high content. They're also known a little bit for their behavior, being really focused or pliable with humans. So talk a little more about this critical socialization period and how these owners can really bring this animal into a state of thriving and not just existing.
Well, it's people, people, people. And so, you know, if we were to make a list of what's important in, you know, dogs or wolves, number one would be bite inhibition. They need to be taught bite inhibition so that should they react or if they react, they inhibit the power of their bite and therefore reduce the damage that's done. Number two would be socialization with people. Now, it needs to be done safely. There's no reason to take, you know, the pup anywhere. You bring the people to the pup. The only precautions I would take is that outdoor shoes remain outside until the dog has, you know, sufficient immunity, you know, against, yeah. And so outdoor shoes remain outside because they can, someone can tread in infected urine, infected feces, and then they track it into the house. So that's a standard rule. Puppies on premises, outdoor shoes outside. And that would be it. There's no need to wash your hands or anything, but we need people there. And the puppy needs time. You know, we don't want a whole load of people descending on the puppy. We want people to come in, to sit down. And then one by one, the people socialize with the pup and they go through the basic training and basic handling process. So come here, sit, come here, sit, treat, come here, sit, treat. And that process of multiple come, sit is kind of like a temperament test. It's a way, you know, to look at the dog's temperament through a magnifying glass, if you like. Because if a dog comes and sits off leash, what he's saying is, hey, I feel okay about approaching you. And if I come and sit and stay, I feel okay about approaching you and sticking around. And that's the number one temperament test. Because if not, and it's why we do all our training off leash, because if the puppy doesn't approach, hey, that's one hell of a warning sign. And what you will find, even in a family, you know, there'll be family members who a young puppy is less inclined to approach, like men, like children. And so we make sure that when they give the dog a treat, we normally use kibble in training, come sit kibble, come sit kibble. But for men and children in their little kibble bags, we put a couple of pieces of bacon or freeze-dried liver or cheese. So all of the kibble smells like that. You know, there's no need to feed junk food and fatty foods, you know, as rewards. But what's important is the kibble smells good. And if you put one piece of freeze-dried liver in a bag of kibble, you've now got kibble that's nutritious and healthy, but it smells like liver. So it's firstly, come sit, come sit, come sit, treat, come sit, treat, come sit, treat. Then the basic handling exercises. Touch the collar region, treat, ear treat, muzzle treat, paw treat, paw treat, paw treat, paw treat. The ghoulies, two treats for those. Hug the puppy. Treat, look in his eyes, treat, then do some things with objects, off take it, thank you, with a pig's ear, with a chew toy stuff with food. And what we're doing here is we're desensitizing all the most common and utterly predictable bite triggers. Because when dogs bite, they don't usually do it for one reason. It's a multitude of reasons that have come together. Like the classic example was a dog that savaged a child, and it lived with the child, but this child was a stranger. Now, it wasn't overly fond of the child it lived with, but it never bit him, probably never would. But the visiting child was a child, a stranger, and inadvertently touched the dog's collar when it was near its food bowl. So you now got four bite triggers all happening at once, and bam, you got a multiple bite attack. So the notion of bite triggers, subliminal bite triggers, helps us understand what otherwise we think are unpredictable and savage attacks. They aren't. The dog warned many times, and the dog had many reasons for biting. It's just that the owners would say, oh, it's a phase, he'll grow out of it, or they describe the dog euphemistically, you know, he's not overly fond of kids, he takes a while to warm to strangers. I mean, I imagine in the wolf dog world you get that a lot. Don't worry, he'll warm up to you in a while. I would say, holy shit, man, you've got a problem just waiting to happen. If that your dog doesn't immediately run to greet a guest, he's saying he's upset. And it just requires another couple of silly things to happen, like the person twists his ankle, screams, and headbutts the dog that's chewing a bone. Then you've got a bite. You see what I mean? So we desensitize all of the subliminal bite triggers. And we do it early when it's no risk. You know, if a 10-week-old, puppy dog or, you know, wolf hybrid attacked, I mean, the only way you would die is by dying laughing. You know, he's not going to harm you.
Right.
But at 4.5 months, you know, he could now cause some serious injury. So you do it early. That's what you tell everyone. Can't do it too early.
As we go forward, if there's any opportunity to discuss how we might be able to maybe desensitize an adult, or if there's a level that we don't go beyond trying to, but it's a natural question progression. But the puppy stuff is far more important, I think, because it's preventative. We're creating an environment. So that's I really appreciate this, but I want to, because I think in your last interview that was brought up a little bit was, is there any way to use some of these socialization techniques for adult animals as well, and specifically adult wolf dogs? So I apologize for interrupting.
Absolutely, but the only difference between prevention and treatment is with prevention, you can just have a party with these youngsters and get to it willy-nilly and just hit them with, like, everything up front. With adult animals, you can't do this. You do the same stuff, but it's slower. It takes, you know, 10, 20 times as much time. I mean, to give you an example, let's say we had a wolf dog and I was looking at him at 8 weeks and told you, you know, you've got a bit of a problem here. He's not approaching people like he should. He's standoffish. He's shy. He's aloof, or all these terms that people use. Basically, which to me say the dog is scared of people. I would hope to resolve it in one session. Okay. If, on the other hand, the wolf dog were 3 months old, I would say it could take 2 or 3 days. If it were 5 months old, it's going to take several months. If it's 8 months old, it's going to take several years. And you know what? That wolf dog will never be what he could have been. The greatest gift we could have given him, confidence around people, we can't give it to him anymore. He will never be the confident dog that he could have been. Now, the whole notion of subliminal bite stimuli, though, not only help us understand seemingly incomprehensible attacks, not only allow us to prevent them happening, they also allow us to treat problems in adult dogs, because most bites come from, you know, 4 or 5 etiological factors. So if we work with just one at a time, we can work below threshold. So, for example, say the dog is scared of men, strangers, being shouted at, being grabbed on the collar. Well, the owners could start with the collar grab exercises. Touch the collar, give a treat. Touch the collar quicker, give a treat. Little quicker, quicker still, treat. Grab the collar, treat. And with the shouting, say, hey, puppy, treat. Hey, puppy, 2 treats. Hey, puppy, 5 treats, and so on. So you associate volume with more treats and better treats. We can work with not men right away. You would work with women. One woman, another woman, another adult woman, and then we'd work with some girls, and then we'd work with some little boys, and then we'd work with some older boys, till eventually we work with men. So you get the idea. So you can work on one variable at a time, on one trigger, and so you actually can, you know, safely work with the dogs in terms of treating the problem and working under threshold. But it takes time. And I tell people that, you know, there's many things I talk about, and you can disagree, and we can argue, you can ignore me, and I really don't mind. It's your dog, not mine. Like, for example, if you want to live with a dog that's not house-trained, I don't give a damn. It's your house,
right?
You know?
Right.
But when you tell me you're not going to socialize, I'm not going to stop talking until I've seen you do it, because the dog's quality of life is at stake. The worst thing that can ever happen to a dog, you know, domestic, fully domesticated, or wolf dog, is it has to live with people, but it's scared of people. You didn't give it the gift of confidence, and so this animal is anxious. Yet he has to meet his biggest fear, people, over and over every single day. It's just absolutely inhumane. And if you tell me you're going to do that, I'm going to tell you you're an absolute bloody jerk. And I'm not going to stop trying to convince you until you do it. That puppy socialization must happen, period. Otherwise, I think it's the cruelest thing that you can do to any animal.
So why would anyone think otherwise? What is it that motivates someone to not socialize a puppy? And let's just not talk about wolf dogs here. Let's talk about just puppies in general, because I think this, you know, we want to appeal to a broader audience as well. But I think it's important here that we talk about, why wouldn't a person do that? I mean, you can give us, I'm sure, textbook answers as to what the results will be of not socializing. But what is it that if I were to encounter someone myself, Ian, I'm on the street and I see somebody with a puppy that's obviously not being, you know, trained in any way, shape, or form, how do I have that conversation? What do I say?
I was just actually searching on my computer here. I can't, I'm very difficult at multitasking, but I just wrote an article about that. And here we go. Yeah, I can find it. What are the reasons for not socializing puppies? There are so many of them, and I just wanted to read them. Number one, why socialize an apparently friendly and confident puppy? You know, it appears friendly and confident because it's a puppy. This will change as it grows up, normal development. Next reason, the early warning signs can be subtle. You know, I pride myself that I can pick them up at about 8 or 10 weeks, that this dog is likely to bite as an adult. Things like slow to approach, no approach, ducking his head when you reach for him, things like that. Another reason not to socialize, you can't change genetic heredity. Look, the same way you can change brain anatomy by behavior and experiences, you can change the expression of genes. No, you can't, unless you're using, you know, the CRISPR-Cas9 routine to snip off bits of chromosomes, you can't change the dog's genes, but you can have great influence on the degree that the genes are expressed and have radical changes on behavior. Socialization is too stressful for young puppies. Yes, it is. But all the evidence done on this, on neonatal handling, you know, don't wait for like young puppyhood. You do this prior to 3 weeks of age. What they show is when you handle, and when strangers especially handle a neonate, you get little spikes in cortisol. It's stressful, you know. But when they test in adulthood, and this has been done on several species, what you find is the early neonatally handled group of dogs shows no stress response to handling as an adult. But the dogs that were not handled neonatally, their adrenals virtually empty out. They have such a high stress response, it's ridiculous.
Wow.
So, yeah. You know, any new experience in a youngster is mildly stressful, but mild stressors are very important in development to teach an animal to cope with big stressors as an adult. Then we have the infamous fear imprint period, which every breeder, dog breeder, talks about. It's total bullshit. It doesn't exist. There's no scientific evidence for this at all. The study that was done that talked about a fear imprint period was a terrible study. It was done, I think, on 8 puppies. One puppy died out of the litter, and 3 of them were weird anyway. It was a badly done experiment. The puppies were freaky, but they made this wild conclusion. There's a fear imprint period at 7 to 8 weeks. It's total bullshit. Risk of infection, we've covered that. No safe socialization with humans, as long as you bring the people to the puppy and outdoor shoes remain outside. We can adequately socialize our puppy in puppy class. No, you can't. Too little, too late. Or the final reason not to socialize, the owners are living in absolute denial. I mean, absolute frigging denial. They do not understand they own a wolf hybrid, and until it grows up, we really don't know how much dog and how much wolf will come out. And so you've got to train the dog for the worst, that you are training essentially the equivalent of a wolf. I always used to tell, you know, when I talk to wolf dog people, usually in person, I kind of joke about it, but I really mean it. I say, in the process of creating a hybrid animal, you know, breeding back to the wild type, basically what you've done is you've reversed the whole process of selective breeding and domestication with one screw. One mating back to the wild type, and you no longer know what you're going to get. And so we have to assume the worst, that we're raising a wild wolf. And it's socialization, socialization, socialization.
Okay. That makes tremendous sense. I mean, it's I think it kind of goes along with my personal experience. I spent a lot of years in rescue, 10 years at a place called Candy Kitchen Wolf Rescue, and then again at Wild Spirit. And my interaction were with kind of the worst that we were able to save, and most of them were adults. I did have the opportunity to raise some pups, and I of a high content nature, and I believe they're hypersensitive to a lot of things, and getting early experiences is what is the only success is. I agree with you 100%. It's different as the animals get older, though. Like you said, that timeline, there is a time frame where it's not really going to happen, and I think that people need to say, pretty much most people get their animals as puppies. If they're getting an adult rescue, they know what they're getting from the behavior model. So getting people,
I think,
to
understand, especially people who are new in the fancy and say, oh, I want to get a wolf hybrid or something like this. And what I used to do way back when, you know, with people say, oh, I want to get a Malamute, or I want to get, you know, Shepherd to use for Schutzhund or what have you. I used to say, well, why don't you say hello to my dog? And I said, but, you know, kneel down in front of him and hold your hand out for him to sniff first. And right when my dog is about to sniff their hand, I would give the hand signal to him to bark and lunge. And he would go, whoa! And the people would almost have, I nearly said a rude word, but they would almost mess their pants. They've got to be wised up. And the only way to wise people up is they should be around a friendly adult animal that explodes on cue. And then I say, this is what you're dealing with. You know, you don't stand a chance against this animal if he decides, hey, let's go mano a mano. You know, it has to work. He has to be confident. And you know, I've been around actually a surprising number of wolf dogs for a dog trainer. Actually, in the very first puppy class I ever taught, we had 3 wolf dog puppies. So this is back in, 1981. And one of them turned out just like a dog. One was kind of like a slightly wary dog. And the third one absolutely turned out like a wolf. And when he was 6 months old, regression set in, and at 8 months, only two people could touch him. The owner, who was an agoraphobiac, and myself. And that, I think, is very sad for the adult animal.
Yeah.
I've met,
it's not much of a quality life, then. You
know, no, it's not. And, you know, I love people who take it seriously, like Nicole Wilde in L.A., like Lynn Andrade in Arizona, and met many of his adult wolf dogs, and they're totally cool. And, you know.
Lynn had Hammy. I got to ask, did you ever get to meet Hammy? Did he ever?
I did, yes.
I think I've heard him mention that. Yeah, and that was a unique animal. So my first foray into the whole world of wolf dogs was back in the mid-90s around Dottie Pendergast. She was writing a publication called the Wolf Hybrid Times, and she had written a book called Above Reproach and another one called Wolf Hybrids. And I guess that's kind of when everything was a lot different, but that's when I first heard of Lynn and Hammy back then. And what was that animal like? I mean, I'd love to hear a third-person point of view about him.
Magnificent, you know? And I say, when it works, it's one. To me, there's nothing like. I mean, we don't have to talk about wolf dogs. That just you know, purebred dogs. Seeing them with confidence. Like I was just watching videos of Kelly's dog. She's training them for ring sport, and I was looking at her dog, and seeing this dog work, I think, my God, you are one confident son of a female dog. He is amazing. There's nothing the decoy could do that would even get him to get a rise out of him. And I think going through life with that level of confidence, you know, is magnificent. And, you know, and I mean, for humans, too, it's like, you know, someone once said about my son, you know, I wish I had his confidence, or I wish they had my confidence. You know, I'm a confident person, so I don't know what it's like to be anxious. I only can understand it secondhand from other people, and I think, well, that's horrible. It's crippling. Yeah. And
agreed.
You know, if people, I don't care if people don't want to train their dog to sit. It doesn't bother me.
Right.
But when they tell me they're not going to socialize it, and they give me one of the many bogus reasons that I listed, I'm just not going to stop trying to convince them, because I know quality of life is at stake, and not just for the wolf dog, but for the owner. I mean, for me, the joy with my dog is... We walk off leash. The dog can meet any person, toddler, baby, any animal, and it's cool. And I love that.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah,
I think,
awesome.
Well, yeah, that was worth the effort, you know. And with this dog, we're kind of lucky because we adopted her. We didn't get her as a puppy. She was just naturally friendly to people and critters. Well, apart from deer. Chases deer, so that was a problem we had to deal with.
Well, that sounds like a recipe to success, in my opinion. So, Ian, I'd like to wrap this up, but a little birdie told me you have this thing for gardening. Is that true?
That is true.
Yeah. What do you like about it the most? You got to tell me. I got to hear. What does Ian Dunbar love the most about gardening?
Well, I grew up on a farm. My mother was a farmer's daughter, and my father grew up in a nursery, so I've always been around plants and animals, and I just like it. I mean, that's my relaxation. I go out there and whatever I'm doing, you know, pruning something or digging holes or building a rock wall, that's when I get most of my good ideas. And so I have a little notebook on me, and I write them down. They don't happen if I sit in front of a computer, you know. But gardening is just absolutely...
So there's a Zen to it for you.
Yeah.
It thought and allows you to tap into that dog to me.
I mean, it's absolutely relaxing. The dog enjoys it, too. Oh. She comes out and lies down next to me and watches everything I do. And it's good exercise, you know, for your core. And, It's just something I like. I like skiing too. I like reading books. You know, I like drinking beer. In fact, I'm going to have one right now.
Well, I tell you what, Ian, the next time you want to go skiing and drink a beer in Colorado, we need to chat because I'm a Colorado boy. I love to get up on the mountain. I mean, that's one of my things. We count the amount of days we can get on the slope out here. So if you're ever this way, we should definitely chat. I want to thank you so much for your time today, Ian. It was a pleasure, and I really hope that that our listeners got something about the puppies and how best to get those animals some experiences. And I think even more so, you sharing this concept of better education for breeders and for shelters and stuff. If there's anything that we can do or the listeners of Wolf Dog Radio can do to perpetuate that, let us know. We're going to have links to your site so people will be able to go there and check things out and become part of your organization. But if there's something that we can do to help with any animal, not just wolf dogs, because, wolf dogs are not that big of a piece of the population when you look at dogs in general in the U.S. So, but if we can help, we want to. And I appreciate whatever you do and those moments in your garden that create these things that help canines.
Well, I think you're already doing what you should be doing. I mean, you've got a radio program. I mean, can I say any more? You're already disseminating the information, so that's cool.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Ian. I appreciate your time, and I hope one of these days to be on the seminar, just get to meet you, because I love to meet people who have these connections with dogs, and you do definitely, sir. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, George. Have a good day.
We pause for these important messages and will return with information for you to enter the contest that one lucky listener will win, a 1-year free membership to the Dunbar Academy All Access Pass.
There are competing visions for the future of the West. And what traditional ranchers see as the future is very different than what conservationists see for the future. Mexican wolves are kind of trapped between those competing visions.
In the American Southwest, the Mexican gray wolf is considered one of the most endangered land mammals in the world. It is in this wild and rugged place where the Mexican wolf is making its return to the wild. And starting over from only 7 founding animals means the genetic health of the population is still a fragile and challenging one.
The Mexican gray wolves in the wild are highly inbred. We're at a very critical point. Every genetically valuable wolf is very important to the population.
But their return is highly controversial.
How far do we have to expand the territory on the concept of preserving these species? How far does it have to go?
Can Mexican wolves live alongside us? Or will history repeat itself once again?
I think that would be a tragedy if we let this species go when we had the opportunity to do something about it.
This is Paula Ficarra.
And Steve Westell.
Founders of Apex Protection Project.
And you're listening to Wolf Dog Radio.
Good evening. This is Greg Largent, and I hope everyone enjoyed the taped interview that we had with Dr. Dunbar. He has some extremely fascinating insights, and we're very glad that we could bring that to you and hope to be able to do so in the future with episode number 3. As George stated, Wolf Dog Radio has an exciting opportunity for all of you to enter and for one lucky person to win a 12-month free subscription to the Dunbar Academy All Access Pass, which is a $240 value. This is an online type thing that Dr. Dunbar offers, and which he talked about in the very beginning of the interview with George. The course is available, is viewable by going to www.dunbaracademy.com. That's all one word, Dunbar Academy. And the winner of this offer agrees to submit and allow Wolf Dog Radio to use their likeness in promotions for both Dr. Dunbar's Academy All Access Pass and Wolf Dog Radio advertising. To enter the Help Me Dr. Dunbar contest, all you need to do is go to www.wolfdogradio.com and click on the Dr. Dunbar promotion, or you can go to our Facebook page of Wolf Dog Radio and scroll to the promotion for this broadcast. Once you get to the promotion, click on the URL link for the Dr. Dunbar to broadcast. From either of the above options, you will see a Listen Now button on the page, directly underneath the picture of Dr. Dunbar. If you scroll down to the bottom of that page, you will see a button where you can like the page. You are required to like the page, and then in the section that says Leave a Reply, where you can leave a comment, we ask that you type Help Me Dr. Dunbar. This will enter you into the contest for the one-year subscription to the All Access Dr. Dunbar Pass. The contest will close in 2 days, October 26, 2017, at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The winner will be chosen randomly by our host, Mr. George Stapleton. Please, only one entry per person. Good luck, and we hope that you win. Now we're happy to bring you another edition of The Vet Tech is In with Ms. Krista Ward.
The Vet Tech is In.
I'm Krista Ward, and thank you for listening to The Vet Tech is In. Tonight, I'll be answering a few frequently asked questions. As always, remember to always consult your veterinarian for any medical advice. Tonight's first question, should I give heartworm prevention year-round? Every climate is different. In the northern states where winter can be fierce, heartworm prevention isn't necessarily needed year-round. The concern, of course, at that rate would be that if your furry friend were to test positive, the heartworm prevention company would not assist in paying for treatment as they would if proof were provided that the animal had been on prevention year-round. This is very important to keep your pet healthy and safe. I always recommend highly that you keep your baby on something year-round just to cover his tushy or her tushy and yours as well if anything were to ever happen. It is very important. Heartworm disease is deadly if not treated or prevented. Always put your pet first and think of the safety of the animal. A few bucks a month is not worth losing your furry friend. The next question is, can the food I feed have an effect on my dog in any way? Absolutely. What you feed is one of the most important factors to your canine's health. Not only does the food we feed affect the weight of the animal, but also contributes to skin and coat health, as well as dental health. Food has also been linked to issues with internal organ function. Research what you're putting into your pet's body. Just because it has a fancy label doesn't mean that it's an ideal meal for Fido. I have seen many cases of animals come in with itchy skin, inflamed skin, all kinds of ear troubles, ear infections year-round. I've also seen many animals come in vomiting, having gastrointestinal issues, and they all tend to be linked to particular brands of food, which you must do your research on because I cannot air them out on the air. But it's important to do that research so that your pet isn't suffering over something so simple. It is simple to switch foods as long as you do it safely as to not upset the gastrointestinal tract. I urge you to all do your research on diet. It is probably the main reason for many declining health factors in America's pets. Not just America, but all pets. Please sit down, research, research, research. Be cautious as to what you're putting into your pet's mouth. You never know that the simplest thing could be treated, taken care of, and prevented all from dying. The next question, are there any medications or treatments provided for vision loss in my pet? There are new medications out on the market and treatments to assist in eye health. There are some medications currently that can reduce cloudiness and some mild age changes. There are also elective surgeries to repair the eyes. It's important to pay attention to any signs of eye issues that may be occurring to your baby, as they could be signs of more serious illnesses such as diabetes. Diabetes can be linked to eye issues, eye function problems. Always get yearly blood work on your animal to ensure that they're in the best health possible. There are many medications out now that not only can treat the cloudiness in eyes, but can prevent dry eye as well. Talk to your veterinarian about what the best option may be if you start to notice a decline in your patient, in your pet's vision. What is an important tip about trimming my pet's nails? The most important tip that I can give is that if your pet has black toenails, which most all wolf dogs do, you can take the edge of the toe and you can push on it just a hair, and whatever hangs over the pad of your pet's toe is what you need to trim off. I always say it's best to go easy, because once you actually quit the animal, they usually don't trust you anymore. So go easy and start early. That's the best tip that I can give. The earlier on that you start trimming your pet's nails or taking them to the veterinarian to have them trimmed, the better. It's a socializing activity as well, and it helps keep your pet from being nervous and scared whenever they grow up. It makes the job for the veterinarian as well as the technicians worlds easier if your wolf dog or your canine friend is used to having their nails or their feet messed with. I think this is one of the most important socializing techniques that anyone can do for their animal. Start out as early as possible with your puppies and let them know that it's okay to have their feet touched. The number one thing that I see working in vet clinics that stresses a dog out is a nail trim. Most dogs will tolerate blood being drawn, vaccinations, x-rays, surgeries even, before they would tolerate a nail trim. So start early, and that's probably the best advice that I can give. Handle your pet's feet. Let them know it's okay, and it's a comfort thing. Give them a Kong full of toys, full of peanut butter, anything that you can think of to give them a treat whenever you're finished trimming their nails. Your vet will thank you. The next question, are joint supplements important? Absolutely. We have large breed canines in our lives, well, most of us do, but it's also important for smaller breeds as well. Joint supplements you can find at any pet store. Typically, they have glucosamine and chondroitin. These products can be relatively inexpensive. If you want to go for a higher payment, you can typically find joint supplements at your vet clinic, but they are a higher quality and have better ingredients. I highly recommend starting your puppy on these at an early age. Thank you for listening to The Vet Tech Is In, and as always, please consult your veterinarian for any health concerns.
Our raging Cajun, Mr. Jerry Mills, speaks about Donald Lewis and wolf dogs in his piece, Reality of Illusion, next on Wolf Dog Radio.
Jerry Mills, and this is the Wolf Chaos Den. I would like to take just a moment to honor my friend, Don Lewis. Don was an old-school wolfer that bred some wonderful, excellent animals. Don was a very, very smart man that lived his dream in an honest, professional manner, keeping his animals' interests at heart first and foremost. You know, Don helped lots of people and touched lots of lives, mine being one. Don lost his battle with cancer, and he is running with the pack in heaven now. Don gave me the honor of taking his pair to raise and carry on his legacy and passion, Shaman and Shade. Run free forever, my friend, never to be forgotten. Well, I'll call this section of this part of my program tonight, reality versus illusion dogs. You ever been somewhere with your wolf dog and heard this? Hey, Bubba, look at that wolf that dude's got. I need me one of them. Or, yo, dude, is that a wolf? Where'd you get it? Or, hey, man, sell me that wolf. Or, that looks just like the wolves my parents had, except theirs had blue eyes sometimes. Or, pretty wolf. I'm getting me a pair this spring and breed them. They're worth a lot of money, you know. A friend of my buddy knows somebody who breeds them, and they selling me a pair. Well, I'm not sure, but most of us have heard stuff like this. And me and my animals have been followed, filmed, photographed, pulled over, hollered at, and followed up my driveway for years. You know, sad part about it, most all these can and will get a wolf dog if they want one. They got no idea what it takes to raise one or keep one contained or how to keep them happy even. They just want a wolf. They want the image. They think they're buying the mystique and a piece of the wild. They want the piercing eyes and the wolf howls. You know, I've repeated myself for years, and I suppose I will, for the greater good, continue to do so. What we have right here is a dog with varying degrees of wolf content. Yes, wolf. Wolves, apex predators. Wolves, about the wildest thing in the woods. Wolves, born with an innate shyness and fear of men. Wolves, they catch and kill other animals for a living. Wolves, myth understood and the most controversial predator in the world. Wolves, animals that give humans a sense of primal fear, whether it's warranted, deserved, or not. Now, we take these animals and breed them with generally Nordic or Northern breeds or German Shepherds. Powerful, large working dogs with a hard head and a strong drive. Then we take and sell the puppies to the general public, strangers and people we have just met or have known for a short period of time. It's a hard damn thing to do responsibly, even for us long-time breeders, especially if you're truly placing these animals responsibly and striving for perfection. There are so many newbie breeders breeding their first wolf dogs that they've acquired and have not successfully raised to maturity. Unknown lines, no idea as to health, disposition, or wolf content. The fuse is lit on both ends. Imagine this. New, inexperienced owners and their first animal. Well, they got kids, other dogs, they got cats, or they're no outside containment, or maybe even just a typical 10x10x6 dog kennel. It's a recipe for disaster. And it's played over time and time again, year after year after year. Pets killed, escaping dogs, kids bit, adults bit, animal control involved, laws written, and wolf dogs banned. You know, officials have asked me plenty of times over the year, where did these animals come from and why did this family end up with these dogs? Well, the only answer to that is, of course, breeders sell them to these innocent or naive people. Dogs aren't for everyone, and everyone should not have access to them. I'm going to say that again. Wolf dogs aren't for everyone, and not everyone should have access to them. Wolf dogs are extremely intelligent. They scheme, they connive, they plot, they plan. They're usually same-sex aggressive. They require extreme fencing and a large area. They require an expensive diet and expensive fence. They also require a companion, which would be another wolf dog. Yes. Wolf dogs grow up and mature much later than dogs. They keep changing the game while they're doing it, too. Well, these are difficult animals at best. Beautiful? Yes. Wolf-like? For sure. The envy of many? You bet. People buy the dream. People want the wild. People want the allure and the grandeur of the wolf. People actually purchase a troublemaking, destructive, hard-headed escape artist that costs a fortune to purchase and a fortune to raise, with nowhere to go, or when they get ready to get rid of them because they can't deal with them anymore. It takes a special kind of person with a true passion to successfully pull it off and raise happy animals and keep them safe. Everyone that wants a wolf dog and has the money is not that person. It don't matter how bad they want one or how much money they have, they still aren't that person. Well, now love is in the air. The season is fast approaching and behaviors are changing. We all know pups are coming. As an old school breeder, I'm going to ask the other breeders out there to search their souls and face the reality of the things I'm talking about. Are you seriously going to sell to the folks asking, shoving money at you? Are these buyers wolf dog people to the bone? Or are they folks buying the illusion? Do they know, I mean really know, what they're getting into? Ask yourself, am I part of the problem or am I part of the solution? Could you, would you, will you, or won't you do the right thing? Well, time will tell. Well, that's it for me tonight. Thank you for listening. This is Jerry. And this is the Wolf Tejas Den.
No going back now. Can't change your mind.
Does your dog suffer from bad breath, itchy skin, or any of the other common canine ailments? Check the ingredients on your dog food. Do you see wheat, corn, potato, or rice products? Is there a long list of synthetic vitamins? Your dog has the same digestive system as a wolf, coyote, dingo, or any other kind of wild dog. But when was the last time you heard of wolves or coyotes attacking farmers' wheat or corn crops? Pedobee is a family-owned business that produces premium raw dog food from local ingredients. Our products are preserved through freezing, not chemicals or heat pasteurization. Do your dog and yourself a favor and start feeding your dog according to their design with Pedobee Premium Raw.
Hi, this is the littlest voice of Wolf Dogdom, and you're listening to Wolf Dog Radio.
So for our next show, we're going to have our very special guest, Dr. John Robb, a doctor of veterinary medicine from Connecticut, and his project, Protect the Pets Campaign. Dr. Robb will also talk about his issues with the vaccine protocol for dogs and cats. Join us on November 14th with Dr. John Robb, and our special guest, returning host, Sky Phoenix. Of course, I'll be there too for this up-close look into vaccines and how they're administered. We all go through difficulties in our lives. What we must come to terms with are how those life issues impact our canines. We too often take for granted many things our animals share with us, and we do so with no malice or even knowledge of it. Our animals love us and rely on us for their well-being. And when we have things that happen in our lives, we must think of what's best for them. Sometimes we cannot see that we may be the issue that our animals are enduring. And when a person loses sight of what well-being to a canine means, we must endeavor to help that person. In this day and age of almost instantaneous communication, there is no time to react before what may be a huge blow to wolf dog ownership takes place. We see them every day on Facebook almost, and the ones you don't hear about are much, much worse. You need to find or create the community that truly is for wolf dogs, not for your knowledge, breeding, rescue, or pretty pictures of these magnificent creatures, but for wolf dogs' well-being. I'm George Stapleton, and this is Wolf Dog Radio. Good night.
You are listening to Wolf Dog Radio.